On today's show, we talk with our good friend Scott Abing about life in the business of media production. A great conversation with a great guest coming up on Punch Punch. And welcome into Punch Punch, the podcast with Danimal and Bobcat, Dan Morris and Kevin Garthwaite, where we talk about a wide range of topics, some from our broadcasting days and some of them other free-range topics, as we like to do on the program. We're also joined by guests every now and again. We'll get to our guest in just a moment, but first we'll welcome into the program Kevin Garthwaite, the co-host on this podcast. Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. It's been quite the adventurous day. Which I went and got fixed. Then I got the lawn mowed today after work and played a little ball in the yard. So just another exciting, exhilarating COVID kind of day. How about yourself?
Similar day. I get to do some of my work from home. I'm kind of a mix. I work for several different businesses doing creative work, but Monday's generally a work from home type day. So did that. And then I coached Little League baseball practice. So I'm still covered in sweat and infield dirt yet as we do this podcast. I'm in need of a shower, but we'll do that as soon as we're done talking. So we're going to bring in our guest, and we're going to hearken back to a few episodes ago. We had talked to a good friend of ours, Angie May. She was a college classmate of ours. She went on into the broadcasting industry and is still in it. And so we got to talk with her about our college days and her first jobs getting into broadcasting and what she's doing now. And we're very pleased to have another former classmate of ours on the show who is also in the media game and still a creator in that world. And with that, we'll welcome our good friend, longtime friend, Scott Abing. Scott, how are you doing?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be with both of you.
It is. And actually, you know, I would say, and I'll speak personally for myself, it's an honor to talk to you because in many ways I looked up to you. I always saw you as a bit of a mentor of mine getting into broadcasting. I mentioned on a previous podcast that your phone call to me was my first contact with the college radio station, WSUP. You had called me one day. I think I'd put my name in that I was interested in being on the college radio station. Got a phone call from a Scott Abing and inviting me to come down and you know, experience the college radio station. So that got my foot in the door, and always looked up and respected the work that you did. So it's a pleasure to have
you
on. Wow.
Dan, I don't know if I should apologize for that or not. I spread the virus of radio to you, is what you're saying.
Yes, you did. So I guess you were the first point of contact, yeah.
It's funny, though. You say you looked up to me. Mm-hmm. I actually looked up to you before you looked up to me, because your mom was my music teacher in Catholic school when I was like in fifth and sixth grade.
That's right.
And my hometown of Cassville, Wisconsin, would have this event called the Twinorama. And every year towards the end of July, we would celebrate twins and have a big, huge parade through the town. Mm-hmm. And Dan Morris would be up on a hay wagon just flailing away at the drums like a complete badass. And I remember seeing him, you know, he was probably what, I don't know, 9, 10 years old.
Yeah, that would have been around that time, 9, 10 years old.
Just killing it in the Twinorama parade when I was a kid. So, you know, Dan, the respect is definitely mutual there. But
well, I appreciate that very much. But you did get me into, you were the first call that got me in the door in radio. However, the first warning shot I got about radio, I remember we had a college or a high school career day, and Doug Wagon from WGLR, he was at WGLR for a long time. He had come and did this career day. And I was super interested. I thought, oh, this is going to be really cool. And the first words out of his mouth was like, don't get into this if you want any sort of money.
That's sound advice.
That was the first thing out of his mouth. And you could just feel the air in the room just kind of go.
Dan, Dan, apparently Doug Wagon was given that speech all over Grant County because he came and visited Cassville when I was in school there in high school. And he sat in front of everybody and said, don't go into radio. And probably about 3 years later, I walked into the WPVL house in Platteville. Mm-hmm. And Nick Lugosi is sitting right inside the door on the right hand side in a chair. He goes, don't go into radio. Don't apply here.
But I'll tell you what, radio, for whatever reason, it gets in your blood. And I've seen it time and time again with all sorts of people that you get out. But once you're out, and it feels good to get out, it really does. But it doesn't take long, and there's this feeling of wanting to get back into it. It's really weird how it kind of sticks with you in that way.
Radio was the start of it all for me. I was, to just take you back, how I got pulled into it was I was a farm boy on a beef farm outside of Cassville, Wisconsin, and the internet was kind of becoming a thing. This was probably like 95, 96. And if you were looking for like alternative sources of music, I started listening to 91 FM when I was disking fields in the tractor. Mm-hmm. And I would listen, you know, whenever I was out working on a farm tractor, I had WSUP, the Platteville student radio station where we all, you know, ended up meeting each other. I'd always have that on. And I'd always listen to the jocks, and I'd always listen to the music, and I'd learn about the music. And that was kind of the sirens that called me into it. It was that time that I spent on the farm, and like WSUP was kind of an escape for me then and led me into it when I ended up going to school there. Like, actually, it was one of the reasons that I went to Platteville was because they had such a strong student radio station. Like I always felt listening, but I'm like, this is really well done considering it's done by students, and it was just had like kind of a loose feel to it. It felt real, and I loved every minute of it, and that's how I got my call, kind of like to get into it. That's what called me in. So it was once it got in my blood, I was kind of stuck in it for life, not radio, but just kind of in broadcast in general.
So we'll talk about the college days in a little bit, but once you got done with the college side of things, or were ready to move on from that, what were some of the jobs you had right out of college?
So my first job after college was I had started an internship for KCRG, which is a TV station based out of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And they had a news bureau in Dubuque, Iowa. And I had contacted Liz Mathis, who was one of the on-air anchors. And we had kind of exchanged some emails. And she said, you're too late to get into the program. And then all of a sudden I got an email saying, hey, you can get in. So I drove out to Cedar Rapids. I met with everyone out there. And they threw me the keys to a vehicle that I could take home, and they offered me a job, and the internship quickly turned into a job. And like, I thought it was really cool that I had a vehicle that I got to drive around and like didn't have to pay for. So for me, it was like, I had already achieved like anything that anyone could achieve in life at that point.
You're living the dream, baby. But
yeah, your story sounds so much better starting out than what Kevin's did when he shared a few weeks ago.
Good Lord, they're giving you a car. I didn't have a car. You know, I had to borrow one from the parents. But so when you got this, Scott, like, did you have to put together like a package? And if so, because to give people a little background, you know, you mentioned people looking up. You're always a go-to guy for me if I had to anything technical or that required actual skill or brains or to figure it out. I knew I had none of that. So I'd always come to you to be like, hey, Scott, I've got this TV show I want to do. Do you mind figuring out the graphics for it? And you just take it. So when it came to getting this internship that parlayed into a job at KCRG, what did you have to put together, like some sort of resume package of videos you shot, or did they just take you on the spot?
Yeah, I had to put together kind of like a reel of things that I had done in school. And I think it was, you know, partially that, and partially that I had the experience from working at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, you know, both as a student employee and inside of the broadcast department. I think that was all very helpful. They were a good like first job out of school, and I really ended up enjoying it. And like I thank Doug Wagon and Nick Lugosi. Okay, Dan, you're gonna edit that out. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to burn radio. What I was saying is it worked out pretty well going into TV. And when I ended up at KCRG in Cedar Rapids, I thought like everything. I had the world by the ass at that point, and I was feeling pretty good about myself.
So what changed?
So, just yeah.
what happened after that? Kind of, you don't need to give the play by play, but just a general. What have you been doing since you moved on from broadcast television, and what you're doing now?
I guess I can bring you to current. Do you want me to step through everything that
You don't need to step through, but if you want to just kind of gloss over how you transitioned, because you started out in broadcast television. So you went from, we did broadcast radio, did broadcast television, and now some of the work that you're doing isn't directly related to like a standard, station. The way I understand it, you do some freelance work, you work for some businesses, you do some other things for TV.
Yeah. I'll just say, you know, after KCRG, I was able to get a job working for an advertising agency, and Liz Mathis, who was one of the anchors at KCRG at the time, her husband ran an ad agency, and she kind of, after meeting me and after I worked with her on some stories, she kind of said, you know, you should go work with my husband at the ad agency. You would, you'd fit in well there. So I worked for a company, it was called Me and V at the time, based out of Cedar Falls, Iowa. I worked there for 5 years as a director of photography, shooting TV commercials, long form videos. We did some internal corporate work for John Deere. And towards the end, we were traveling a lot, doing a lot of like healthcare commercials and that sort of thing. And it was kind of getting to a point where I was like, okay, I'm ready for the next adventure in life. And I was getting into riding motorcycles. And there was a company called JMP Cycles based out of Anamosa, Iowa. They had an opening for a video person. So I applied there and I got in, and I was going around to motorcycle rallies. I was going out to Sturgis, South Dakota for the big Sturgis rally. I was going down to Daytona Beach, Florida for the two Daytona rallies that are down there each year. I was getting to go to a lot of the motorcycle industry events and kind of doing event coverage, also kind of running some of their social media channels and doing photography for their catalog and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That went on for about 5 years. And then the company went through kind of a merger consolidation thing and moved their corporate offices to Dallas, Texas. And I could either move to Dallas, Texas, or I could find a new path. And I took a job with a production company here in Cedar Rapids called Metro Studios, and I was kind of back to doing what I was doing for the ad agency. Stayed there for 8 months and said, all right, I'm going to go out on my own. And that was September 2016 that I did that. And since September 2016, I have been I started doing freelance work, original camera operator, and I was taking all that money to buy my own cameras, to buy my own lighting equipment, to buy my own sound equipment. And where I'm at today is just kind of the continuation of that growth. I run a production business. What I do is if a TV show or someone that's doing a documentary, if they need footage gathered from Eastern Iowa, or, you know, sometimes a little further out, I'll get a phone call. I might go and shoot interviews. I might go out and shoot footage of a particular thing that they're doing a story on. For example, I guess it was about 2 weeks ago, I did a shoot for a TV show that's being produced in Europe called Ancient Apocalypse. And I provided all the equipment for that. I provided two cameras, all the lighting, backdrop, sound equipment. And what I'm doing then is a feed. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm talking too much. I'm gonna back.
No, you're good.
You're good.
I feel like I'm talking too much. I'll back it up.
I want to hear about the Ancient Apocalypse. Is what I want to hear.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So what I was doing is I was providing the recording services for this show that's being produced in Europe. I'm not sure if it's going to be on Netflix eventually or like what the end target is, but they were interviewing an expert from the University of Iowa for like an entire day. And because of COVID, what I did was set up a MacBook Pro, and then he was able to see the producer in London like on the MacBook Pro screen, and then I was able to feed them my cameras, and they conducted their interviews like they would if the producer had flown in from London. So what I do is I provide the technology and the equipment to, you know, gather footage for TV shows, for television productions, and that sort of thing. On top of that, I work as a freelance camera operator for BTN, ESPN, and other sports productions that happen in Eastern Iowa. So that's kind of kind of what I do. That's kind of who I am, and that's what I'm into.
I was going to say
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say you weren't talking too long, because I think Kevin and I are both like hanging on every word, because your career sounds like you did it right. At least for us. So I think we did some things wrong. Go like, wow.
Hey guys, I made. It's so easy to look back and with what you learn going through everything and realizing like how stupid some of the choices you made were, but
and that's true.
The only way you get to figure out how stupid the choices were, like the only way you figure that out is by actually living them. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I made a lot of bad choices. I could have done this whole business thing like 10 years ago, but I wouldn't have had the experience and I wouldn't have known what it was really worth until I arrived at it after going through a bunch of other things where, you know, basically I was working for other companies. Yeah. I was working for businesses who were in control and making decisions that kind of made my life suck more than it had to. Mm-hmm. So being able to kind of be my own boss and decide what I want to work on, that has been the most rewarding part of finally getting to this place. And I say it's like I'm now in life where it's like, all right, things are kind of going well. Like all along, I kind of felt like I was like just trying to figure it out, I guess. So don't if I paint too rosy of a picture, you know, I didn't do everything right, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. It's just where I'm at now. I feel better now. I think Angie was kind of saying the same thing. Like I feel better now, like mentally, emotionally, physically, just time has been good for learning and for figuring some things out, I guess. That's what I'll say.
And I think part of that might just be the age that we are getting to. I mean, all of us are, you know, into our late 30s, approaching 40 years old. And, you know, you don't know crap. You don't know anything in your 20s. You get out of college and yet you have some knowledge from school, but you have no real world knowledge. And you spend, you know, the better part of a decade wallowing in that, in all kinds of dumb decisions and not knowing what the hell you're doing at all. And as you get into your 30s, you know, you finally start to develop a rhythm. And more importantly, you start to really understand yourself and understand what is of value to you. And what are your non-negotiables? Like, what are the things like, screw that, I'm not doing that because it ain't worth it. and you kind of, you know, you navigate through this in your 30s, if you're paying attention to it, of course. And, you know, by the time you get to where we're at now, I think that's where people really start to find their rhythm. Surely it's different for different people and situations are always different. But I think that tends to be the case for a lot of people. At least that's been the experience that I've had.
And to kind of draw this back to, you know, broadcasting, what I do is, you know, a lot of what I do is servicing either broadcast television or, you know, production for streaming platforms or that sort of thing. And with working in this industry, radio is the same way. It's exciting because if you screw it up in the moment, everyone knows about it. Mm-hmm. Like if you make a mistake, everyone can hear it. Everyone can see it. So you have to get it. You have to get it right. And that's like, for me, that's part of the fun. That's part of the thrill. Yeah. Like if all eyes are on you and you got to get it right, like that's, you know, that's part of the excitement. That's part of what keeps me kind of doing this sort of thing is like, I appreciate that part of it. And that's no different than when we were at WSUP, you know, doing an air shift there, even as a student. So it's like, once it gets in your blood, once you get a little taste for it, it's hard to get away from it. It's hard to completely let go of it. And, I don't know. It's where I'm going to ride it as long as I can, I guess. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah. Well, being live,
you talk about a ride. I'm just listening, Scott, and I'm just visualizing, okay, you've got quite the dichotomy of different personalities that you've had to interact with. You go from working in news, where I assume you're on the road filming and getting footage, to probably doing live shots, and you're in such a time crunch. Then you transition to working for an ad agency where you really get to get your creative juices out, where you can maybe take some time. Then I imagine some of the things that went on at Sturgis and working in the going to the motorcycle rallies, that had to be a totally different experience. Some that are probably not family friendly, but nonetheless. And then you go to, you know, doing footage for BTN. So you kind of get that live sports where it's kind of, so you're just kind of like all over in a good way. Can you just talk about like what differences there are and what you like about each and maybe what are the challenges of each? Cause it's just an interesting parallel of all these different avenues you've worked at, and each are probably different in their own unique way.
Yeah. And I guess each one is kind of, you know, challenged me in very different ways. CRG, right out of school was just very challenging because I was being hit by a lot of different technology that I had no exposure to previously. I was figuring out how to run microwave trucks and do remote links, figuring out how to do a satellite uplink, you know, running satellite trucks and that sort of thing. And, you know, I geeked out over it. I loved it. Like I said, you know, I would stay late and learn everything. And, you know, I would do everything I could to like understand what my job was. And it was as technical as I wanted it to be, because the better I got at those things, the more they'd have me do them. You know, once I got good at running the satellite truck, then it was like, all right, go up to Camp Randall and shoot this game because you can run the satellite truck and we can feed footage back on the way home. Or nice. go over to Ames and shoot this Iowa State game and run the satellite truck, or, you know, that sort of thing. So it was like my ability to understand technology and my ability to, I guess, translate that to success led to opportunities while I was there. And I got to do the cool stuff because I could run the equipment. They would trust me to go out on the road with the satellite truck and get the job done. Now, working at the ad agency, it was a completely different story. My job was much less technical and required much more of an artistic approach. So it was actually really hard for me because I had to be in a completely different mindset. And in some ways, I wasn't ever completely comfortable with it, but you know, that's part of working through things, is like finding your confidence in something and knowing that you're good enough to do it. And even if you are, sometimes you don't think you are. And that can be the hardest part about, you know, going for something that's kind of at the next level. It's like you finding that confidence. That's always kind of the tough thing.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. I think eventually I kind of figured out what I had to do to learn and to capture what I was supposed to be doing kind of from the right perspective. And then going into the next job, that was something where I was on an island. I was no longer working with video people. I was no longer working with people that understood kind of the, you know, the business that I was in. So when I was working for, you know, the motorcycle company, the online retailer, that was all about just kind of figuring out how to navigate office politics more than anything. That was more figuring out how to kind of translate what I'm doing to people that don't live in my world. That was kind of the toughest part there, because I had gone from being surrounded by marketing and advertising people that all understood video production and how it's done and how the work gets done every single day to being thrown into a world where nobody had any clue what I was talking about. So that was, you know, that was the challenging part of those 5 years, was kind of figuring out how to fit in an environment where nobody understands you and nobody really understands what you're doing, but they still kind of expect you to deliver results. So yeah, that was.
Did you get initiated into a motorcycle gang? That's what we really want to know.
You know, not that I can tell you about.
I get
that. I'm sworn to secrecy on a lot of things that happened at the motorcycle rallies. You know, I can tell you that happened that, you know, was completely outside of any corporate policy. A violation of every single one of them, really. You know,
probably the FCC would not allow such things to occur in public broadcasting.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was kind of a challenge in a whole different way. And I'd like to think that I'm using those experiences from my background in my own business to kind of, you know, if I'm working with businesses, like tomorrow I'm doing a shoot for a company that fabricates large pieces of equipment. They do manufacturing for like special custom orders for John Deere and Caterpillar and a defense contractor, and they have no clue kind of what I do video production wise, but I'm working with them. And I like to think like some of my experience, you know, having worked for the online retailer, having to translate all of that, helps me to, you know, go out there as a business person and sell myself and translate what I'm doing and also understand what they mean when they ask me for something and try to make, you know, the best possible, you know, product for them when I get a call to do something. So, I'd like to say that, you know, everything that I've been through and all the really hard lessons I've learned in life, I'm trying to use those to, you know, be a good business person, to, you know, conduct myself appropriately as a businessman, you know, to, you know, both be somebody that, you know, conducts himself ethically and, you know, can be an example, and not a bad one, in the way that I go about things. So, you know, when it comes to paying people, when it comes to the equipment that I buy, you know, just trying to do everything using all the knowledge that I've gained this far, you know, thus far in life. So, yeah, that's my best attempt to tie it all together.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way you describe it, I mean, as after you leave college, you're taking on jobs that, you know, you already have some technical acumen, but you're getting challenged to increase on that. You jump into a job where now, you know, you already have some creative abilities, but those abilities are being pushed and enhanced. Then jumping into more of a business world where you gotta, you know, engage in the office politics, you get better at that. And then also in experiencing the different businesses, because, you know, that's an experience in itself. I mean, just understanding how different business sectors work and how individual businesses are set up, you can see the similarities, you can see the differences, you know, and I've had that experience, especially recently in the last 3-4 years, where I've, you know, been able to do very different jobs and work for some very different companies. And you start to see some of the things that are similar and some of the things that go, okay, well, they do that really well. They don't do that so well. Or here's something that this other place does. And eventually you can start to pull that together, as opposed to maybe someone who stays in the same career or the same field, you know, their entire working life. So, yeah, it's a great way to piece together experience and really push your abilities and make you a better person and a better, you know, person to contract with when it comes to that creative stuff. So that's pretty cool. I know you didn't want to paint too rosy of a picture. So let's talk about all of the bad choices you've made in your life.
Oh, God.
Oh, or the challenges of some of the experiences. And I know, obviously, you don't have to
I'm mostly partly joking about that. So one thing that Kevin and I have shared in previous episodes, some of it relating back to college days or maybe just getting into the business, we've shared stories of like where things went completely wrong. You talked about, you know, that's the cool thing about live radio or live television is that once it starts, it's a runaway freight train and all you can do is try to keep it on the tracks. That's your only job. And if you do a high quality job, then bonus. But really, it's just keep it on the tracks. And I think we've all experienced moments where things went completely off the tracks and you were the one at the helm. So what is there something that comes to mind that was a maybe borderline traumatic experience?
Throw Scott a bone here. An example would be like, for example, when Dan deleted out the entire music library and the entire computer at WPVO.
I had a bad day. Yeah, that was a bad day. I played commercials for about an hour straight.
Actually, I could probably top that because mine was dead air.
Okay.
I left out that I ended up working at WPBL. When I walked in the door and Nick Lugosi said, don't go into radio, don't apply here. I did fill out the application and I ended up working there. And I remember it's college. So I drank a lot because it was college and I had stayed up like partying the whole night. And it was probably like 10 in the morning. And I got a call from Luke Dalton, who was in charge of scheduling at the time.
Yeah,
Luke Dalton.
Yeah. He trained me initially. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a good guy. And he called me up and said that he needed somebody to do an air shift in the afternoon because Ron Eichstead had to go broadcast live somewhere or some sort of thing that just come up. And I said, I haven't slept in like 24, 36 hours. I'm in college. I'm bad at math. It was like 24 or 36 hours. I'm like, I have not slept. I'm like, I'll come in if you want to pay me, but I have not slept. So I came in and I think it was probably about 5:15 that Ben Rosenthal, I think he was the station manager at the time, he comes in and says, Scott. And at that point, I woke up because I had been passed out on the mixer, on the radio station mixer. When the head boss man catches you sleeping on the station mixer and you pop up, there's no good cover. It's dead air. Nothing's playing. There's no way to like cover that up and say like, oh, I was just resting my eyes or something. And the best part is I had the imprint of the audio board on my face because that's how long I had been out.
In your defense, you told the guy that you hadn't slept in over 24 hours. So
in my defense, that's true. And this in a story that I have less defense for. I had been scheduled for a morning shift on WPVL, mm-hmm. and I had gone downtown to do a little bit of drinking on 2nd Street. I liked to do that a lot when I was in college, the whole drinking thing. And at some point, probably about 3 or 4 in the morning, I realized that I had to work at the radio station the next morning, like 7 a.m. So I walked out to the radio station, and I said, if I sleep inside the door, there's no way that they can start things without me because whoever opens the door is going to have to hit my foot. So I slept in front of the door and I scared the shit out of Ed Witt when he came to drop off the news from Lancaster.
So did you actually go on airs?
I did, and I wasn't late. Like, my theory was sound. I knew that someone had to show up at the building, and I knew they couldn't open the door without hitting my feet. So that was like I'm not even going to bother trying to set an alarm. I'm just going to go to work. I'm going to sleep in front of the door. That way, when they show up in the morning, they'll wake me up. It was my only foolproof method to like not be late for work.
Quickly, chronologically, did this occur before or after the falling asleep on the audio board?
Wow. College is hard on the memory. You know, I can tell you that both of these stories happen. And actually, I did the sleeping inside the door trick on multiple occasions. Okay. Rob Callahan can attest to this. He's seen it. It was probably not the best look for me, but it definitely happened, and I'm not sure which one came first. They never fired me, though. In fact, they just gave me more work.
You know, I found that to be the case at most small-town radio stations, is that if you just keep showing up to work, even after you do something so stupid, they'll keep bringing you back because you keep showing up.
Yeah, exactly. So
I've heard of some even bailing people out of jail to come in and fill a shift.
I believe that could happen.
Like a Saturday night board op shift that's going to go till 1 in the morning. You know, it's like, get out of here and work. We'll pick you up and drop you off. You got to find your own way home, though.
I board up plenty of Brewers baseball. Like that was kind of
you know, looking back, I miss that to a degree. That was one of my favorite things to do early in my career, was just go in and board up games. I know some people hated it and they just dreaded it. I mean, the hours are obviously not great depending on what you're doing at Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, but to me, it was the easiest job in the world. And it, you know, I came in with a bunch of snacks and I'd kick back and listen to the game. I thought that was great.
Yeah, I think board hopping teaches great discipline, and it's a lost thing. Like you don't.
Yeah, it is.
There isn't anything like that. Now you just set it all up in a computer,
right.
and you test it out beforehand, and then you let it run. Back then, you actually had to sit there patiently and wait for Bob Uecker to do a legal ID, which he might do at the top of the hour, or he might just kind of shift it.
That was the beauty of Matt LePay, voice of Wisconsin Badgers. That dude just knew when it was time for the legal ID. So he was the easiest I always thought to board op for was any Badger basketball or football game, because Matt just knew. So I hear you, because, you know, when you work in the industry, you don't listen to radio or you don't watch television ever the same. And that is always the funny part. It's like, are they ever, Brewers ever going to get to a legal ID here? We're like 10 past the hour.
So in radio, because we've all worked in radio, in one way, shape or another, in the business has changed. So Scott, you mentioned that, you know, when we were first getting in, radio stations need board ops. And that was a great foot in the door, whether it was for a college student or just some local kid, that was willing to put in the hours, they would train you to get in the door and you could board up games. Now that's not so much. So much of that is just purely automated. So many of the shows are just voice track. There isn't that live element anymore where you might need someone to pull a weird shift. So you have that happening. So there's less opportunities to just get in. And simultaneously, the thing that I found being in radio recently is that there wasn't a whole lot of kids that were wanting to get in, you know, so they kind of coincided fairly well in a way, because what I saw is that, you know, for people our generation and earlier, radio is a way to have a voice. That was part of the appeal, is that you could be on the air. People would hear you. Now, you know, a lot of kids, you know, they aspire to be YouTube stars, or it's really easy to set up a podcast or something like that. So that tends to just even have some fame or a following on Instagram. You know, that what I've seen is that has scratched that itch for a lot of younger people who would have been interested in radio or television. They're going about it that way. So that has changed too, as far as the crop of people getting into the business. And I think that has had a big effect and will continue to play a big role. What are some of the things that you've seen change in broadcasting and in this still kind of a quagmire of a new media climate? Where do you see things going?
Wow. Well, that's a really big question, Dan. And it's a really good question. Where are things going? I was watching a bunch of TikTok videos earlier today, and it's just yeah, but I'm saying like it's just like what you were saying, Dan. It's like that's the new outlet for mm-hmm. this creativity, this desire to be heard or seen. So there's always going to be kind of like this new platform or this new thing now where we had these institutions growing up. TV was an institution,
yeah,
and radio was this institution, and we could all kind of latch on to the values of radio and the values of television, and we could all kind of relate through that. And now it's kind of every few years there's just kind of going to be this new platform and this new format and this kind of new language to communicate in. I you know, I'm just trying to hang on and make sense of it. You know, as you get older, that sometimes that can get a little harder mm-hmm. to take things down to like a much more granular level.
Sure.
Like, how are things happening for me right now? What I'm seeing is, you know, technology is miniaturizing everything, obviously. When it comes to doing video production, everything's smaller. It consumes less electricity. It's lighter. It's easier to carry around. It's easier to go anywhere and gather stories. Drones are a big part of that. You can fly anywhere. You can go anywhere. You can capture video. During the riots in early June, I was watching an independent media source. They were live streaming from the middle of a riot where you could hear what everyone was saying.
Yeah.
You could see how the police were reacting. You could see exactly what was happening on the ground, and you get like this firsthand source of information. And you know, that I think can be a really good thing. So the technology allows us to be more in touch with what's happening. And that's kind of like the good side of it. And there's also kind of like the responsible use of it. When we had television and radio, these institutions, they did certain things a certain way, and you could expect that. Mm-hmm. And now with kind of the online platforms, it's a little more Wild West, I guess.
You know, yeah, as far absolutely.
As like, is the information I'm like, how manipulated is the information I'm receiving if it's not being brought to me directly? So, it's kind of weird. Like when I grew up, there was CBS, NBC, and ABC. You know, those were kind of like the big three networks. And when you watch the news every night, it kind of felt like we all agreed on what was being reported.
Right.
And when you heard Peter Jennings tell you the news, it was like, well, that's what's happening in the world.
That's the you didn't have much of a reason to question that.
I mean, I didn't as someone growing up. Mm-hmm. I just kind of assumed like that is the way it is.
Yep.
And now it's, I don't know if it's that I'm more perceptive or that things are more colored, but it's kind of like the institutions that we once were a part of seem to have kind of, you know, maybe certain ones have become more politicized. And, you know, that's just the way it is. I'm rambling a little bit.
Well,
and it might be this whiskey old fashioned that I'm drinking.
Well, let me jump
there. You go. You touched on business. That was something that had to get on. So we know you're drinking whiskey. I've got to do a quick roll call. I got Spotted Cows going. Dan, I'd like to think that you stepped it up this week. Do we have at least like sparkling water over tap water?
No, man. I'm doing some lemonade this week.
Okay. That's 2 weeks in a row on lemonade.
Yeah. So here's the, here,
see that.
Go ahead.
Dan was always the smart one. He would never, whenever I would be downtown drinking, Dan would be off doing something like really smart. He'd be off practicing. He'd be
working.
Off practicing for his band. He'd be off working.
Yeah.
And I was always off drinking. And that's, but that's why Dan's the smart one.
I would like to think that we could have met in the middle somewhere because there's some drinking that I wish I would have done.
Right. That was Country Kitchen.
2 a.m.
But it's just a, you know, the quick sidebar on the drinking, and this is, I've had this conversation with many people. What for whatever reason, The taste of alcohol does not lure me in one bit. It's not a taste that I truly enjoy. I mean, there's certainly days where like a cold beer at the end of a day of hard work tastes pretty dang good. But, you know, I can have one or two and that taste goes away pretty quickly. And so that has been the thing. It's not through some sort of great willpower of like, oh, I'm not going to drink that much. It doesn't taste that appealing that I want to drink a lot of it. And so if I do drink, it's purely socially and, you know, for something like that. And so that's all it is for me. And so I used to always think, because this is just the way the world was for me, that anyone else that was drinking was just doing it to be cool. You know, like nobody really likes this. This doesn't really taste good to anybody. But some people just could step up their game and suffer through it better than I can. And, you know, I certainly have learned, you know, that perception was wrong, my naive perception of that. But I wish I would have definitely done some more hanging out in college. Kevin and I talked a little bit about that as we ran through some of the music stuff in a previous episode. But yeah, it would have been nice to meet in the middle somewhere. Somewhere, I'm not sure where that falls in the blood alcohol content level, but there would have been a nice middle ground I'm sure we all could have fell into.
Scott, before I forget, I know we talked about some of the maybe less than stellar, but in previous episodes, Dan and I talked about some of the cool parts of working in broadcasting or in the industry that you're in is you get a chance to either meet some cool people or work on some cool projects. Are there a couple off the top of your head that you're like, that was a really cool experience or that was something that really sticks out in my mind?
Oh, I mean, well, having the opportunity to work for BTN and in ESPN and doing college sports I have to say it's fun. It's fun to be like right in the mix, like to run a handheld camera and be right on the sideline or be right underneath the basket. A lot of times that's what I'm doing, to be like right in the middle of, you know, all the excitement. It's a fun job. So it's just like in general that it's something that I do. And it's something I do because I enjoy it. And it's something that I don't do necessarily because it makes sense to me from what I'm doing as a business, but it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to be a part of that. Like college athletics it's good stuff.
When you, getting back to college a little bit, so radio got in your blood, you heard it on WSUP, things like that. Did you have any other careers that you were interested in before that sort of got into your brain? You know, what were the things as you were growing up, if you had to say, well, this is what I want to be when I grow up, what were the things that were kind of evolving as you aged?
Yeah, so I grew up on a farm, a beef farm, and I guess what I always thought when I was a kid was just like, I'm not going to do this. That was
same.
That was kind of,
I know that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of what was in the back of my head every day.
I got to bale one more bale of hay.
Yeah, that was. So what I guess eventually when I was in high school, I was handed a video camera and I started shooting and started doing some editing with a couple VCRs up in my room, you know, like hitting play pause and, you know, splicing some video together that way and doing some school projects, editing VHS to VHS in my bedroom late at night. And I guess what I finally realized is like with my understanding of technology and computers and how much fun TV and radio are, like it just seemed like a place where technology was kind of meeting excitement that was happening in the world. And that's why, you know, as when I was in high school, I was drawn to radio because of WSUP. And I was drawn to video because it was something that the more you understood the technology, the better your stuff could look. So the more you learned about the software, the more you understood the hardware you could connect to your computer, like the deeper you went into it, the better job you could do. And it's still that way today.
Yeah.
It's still that way today. And that's why it's always suited me well, because if I put my time in and get the technology right, then I can do better work or do things more efficiently or more quickly. So I didn't really have any other big, I guess, draws. I didn't ever think, like, I'm going to go work in radio. I didn't think I'm going to go work in television or I'm going to go do video production. I just kind of ended up at UW-Platteville because of WSUP and getting into doing some video stuff in high school. It wasn't because I was chasing a career. It was just where I ended up at.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that I had like a target in mind as far as where I was going to go. I never really had a goal as far as like, I didn't say like, hey, I want to be on the radio in some market, or I want to work for some TV station. I guess it has just kind of been chasing it as long as I can. Like that same idea of just trying to be useful and understanding technology and being good enough at it that I'm useful.
Right.
See, Dan, I figured it out is that where we went wrong is we set goals. What I just learned is that if you don't set one,
I got married is where I went wrong.
Figuring things out. Yeah.
They asked me in senior seminar where I was going to be in 10 years and 5 years. And I remember I said, I don't have any idea. How could I predict where I'm going to be in 5 years or 10 years? That's all dependent upon the people I'm going to meet. It's going to depend upon the places I end up moving to. It's like, how could I possibly tell you where I'm going to be in 10 years? It's like, I have no idea what I'm doing is even going to become. Like, how could I possibly predict? How could I set a goal accurately? Because everything's always changing. You know, by the time I got to the place that I wanted to be, it wouldn't exist anymore. So I never really understood, though. I think there's people smarter than me that understood you should set a goal that's not so specific. They went more general with it and just said, like, I want to be a successful business owner, or I want to, I want to meet a bunch of famous athletes. You know, mm-hmm. they were able to set goals like that and achieve that sort of thing. And I always just said, I have no idea where I'm going to end up. I'm just gonna go with it as long as I can.
I think both approaches can work very well. I mean, that goal-oriented mindset, it definitely narrows your focus into kind of giving you guidance for those choices that you make to go along the way. However, it can be maddening when those choices don't appear to you. But your path, I think, works just as well. I think it does a disservice to say that it doesn't, because what that allows you to do is just be open to all the choices. And so if something comes up that seems appealing, even though it may not be on the path of where you think you're supposed to go, if that looks appealing and looks like it makes sense now, you do it because you get that different type of experience that has led you to where you are now. So I think, you know, the way you did it works just completely fine. You mentioned the college class, the senior seminar. I think a lot of us, especially in broadcasting, would say that, you know, we probably got more out of the college experience in the on-campus stuff that we did through WSUP or TV5 or some of those other things, and the social connections that we made. What stood out for you when you were working in college? Obviously, we know WSUP, but it was there any classes that you really appreciated or really challenged you in a way? Or was there any other experiences in particular that was probably, you know, defining of your college career that sets you on the path you are now?
Wow. So the best thing about UW-Platteville when I went there was that I was able to get, you know, really good hands-on. And some of the classes that I had, all the classes were pretty big on hands-on, but one of them that wasn't was a comm law class taught by Art Rainey.
Mm-hmm.
And the comm law class is something that has come into play on very numerous occasions, because So much of what we do deals with, you know, intellectual property rights, who owns what, and like being respectful of someone else's creation, that it's theirs, that you can't take it and use it for your own profit. And kind of, we were growing up in the age of Napster, and taking a class in comm law was kind of the other side of it, explaining that people have rights to these things as artists, as creators, and then understanding that I myself am an artist and creator. That class was to me valuable, to kind of bring that side of things to conversations that I ended up having at the advertising agency, you know, at the online retailer that I was working for, where it's like, why can't we just take this thing that someone else made and use it?
Right.
And kind of saying, you know, explaining it from the perspective of what the, you know, of what the law is, and why we have to be respectful of other creators, because we ourselves are creators. So, you know, that's kind of the very serious answer, as far as like what benefited me most from classes. It wasn't so much like the granular information. It was just kind of seeing that what we're doing is like, is something that somebody wants to own and control the rights of, and kind of seeing it in that way, so that you can protect that if you create something, and protect somebody else's creation if they create it. So that's probably my best my best answer, I guess.
Well, I think you nailed it on the head with the Napster thing, but so many other things. I mean, just being able to do a, you know, for us, you know, at the time, a Yahoo image search, a Google image search, and be able to find anything you're looking for, and you know, it just be free, you know, seemingly free for the taking, right? Music, right. Seemingly free for the taking. You just watch YouTube, you know, especially in its earlier days, where it was just a wild west. If you recorded a video of something else that was obviously, you know, belonged to someone else as intellectual property, didn't matter. Just post it, because you could do whatever you want with it. So, you know, we kind of came of age as the internet was really, as we've said before, a total wild west. And I think it has screwed up everyone's perception of just what that is. Most people don't even know that intellectual property rights is a thing, let alone begin to understand what that is. And it applies to all sorts of media, whether it's the music, the images, and things like that. And, you know, and I've experienced that myself in various businesses that I've worked in. Like, what do you mean we can't put a Packers logo on our website? Or what do you mean we can't, you know, use, you know, this, you know, song by Aerosmith as the background music to our ad, you know, and to be able to explain that, you know, that law perspective. Yeah, that's a big part of it. And it's a part, especially in the internet culture we live in. That is understood and is in many ways out of control.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Kevin, do you have any questions you want to throw out there for Scott, or any topics you want to bring to the table? Fire away, man. I've been dominating the conversation.
So we talked a little bit. I think I remember saying one of the cool things that you got to experience is that you actually got to film one of the last that was ever held at UW-Platteville. For those of you not know, the Chicago Bears, which is your favorite team, Scott, used to have their training camp facilities at UW-Platteville for many, many years. And I believe you said one of your highlights is you actually got to film and be a part of the last ever training camp. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience? Because that had to be fun as a kid growing up, being a Bear fan, and then you got to be there for the last hurrah, per se.
Yeah. So, you know, growing up in Wisconsin, everyone always says, so you must be a Packers fan then, right? And then I have to tell them the little story about Platteville, Wisconsin, and the Chicago Bears training camp. And you know, from the mid 80s on, growing up, the Bears had their training camp in Platteville, Wisconsin at UW-Platteville. And it was for an NFL team to come to a town the size of Platteville for their training camp was just a huge deal. And for a kid that was to go and see them practice, to see William Refrigerator Perry like practicing. Like, that was the guy who I watched on TV and like thought and idolized, to see that like right there in Platteville, just 30 minutes from where I grew up in the middle of nowhere, to see an NFL team. Like, that's kind of how it was cemented in that I was going to be a Bears fan. And then to come to UW Platteville years later and have the training camp happening there and working for what was TV services at the time. Part of my responsibilities was to go out and, you know, gather footage around campus. And obviously the Bears training camp was a large event that they'd use footage from for other promotions for the university to kind of, you know, say, you know, not only is it UW Platteville, but even the Chicago Bears come here. And I was tasked with shooting the very last practice. And I remember right as he walked off the practice field and signed autographs for all the kids, and knowing like that's the, you know, this is the last Bear that's ever going to walk off the field here in Platteville. Like, this was, it was kind of an end of an era. Mm-hmm. It was the end of kind of of what had brought me into being a Bears fan. Like, it was a sad day for me, but it was a really cool moment to be there to kind of see it end. So
what year was that?
2001 was the 2001. The year, I believe. I believe it was 2001.
Sounds right.
I try not to say anything with
too much certainty. Yeah.
Too much certainty about the past.
Well, all I can say is that I vaguely remember, and again, memories are awful, but I remember at the very least my freshman year, which would have been year 2000, I had a house that was off campus, and I remember, you know, kind of being in town and being around the university, and I remember kind of driving over to the dorm area, and I remember seeing like some really nice cars and go, oh, those are the Bears players. Cars that are parked here. And I remember having that, you know, being noticing that. And so at the very least 2000.
And I always remember hearing stories of students that got to work there in the dormitories, and the players would leave behind, I should say, like these TVs and extra fridges and all this stuff. So that was always cool to hear those stories of those that worked, you know, on the campus. Like, yeah, got all this extra swag and all this cool stuff. So it was kind of a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, of course, the Bears were huge, especially in the late 80s after they won the Super Bowl in 85 and just being a dominant team in the years to follow. You know, think about that period of time where, you know, so many of those NFL teams had training camps in Wisconsin. It was really kind of this really unique thing. And I never saw the Bears practice in Platteville. I always knew that they were there. The one story that I always remember my mom sharing, my mom went to Platteville on a shopping trip with some of her sisters. And her story was that she almost ran over Jim McMahon. And because they were driving by campus, and I for what my memory thinks that they were kind of by Olsvik, the Olsvik Center. And they're driving along that road, and all of a sudden a man jumps out in front of him, and she slams on the brakes because she almost hit him. And, you know, it was like, oh, you know, put up the arms and go, oh, gosh, I'm sorry. And it was Jim McMahon, who was obviously recognizable at that period of time. And so, yeah, that was always her story. She almost ran over Jim McMahon, which I think would make a lot of Packer fans really happy if that were to happen.
Hey, he played for the Packers.
He did. Yeah. He has a Super Bowl ring with the Green Bay Packers. Yeah.
Real quick, funny about that is when I worked at the Fan WDUZ, and one of my coworkers, Chris Hobble, wrote a book on the Packer Super Bowl 31 team, and Gilbert Brown, you know, the Gravedigger, big defensive tackle, was the writer of that book. Chris co-wrote it with him. We had Gilbert on, and the topic got brought up. And I think I got a copy of the book, but Gilbert Brown purposely left Jim McMahon out of that book because the story was that when the Packers went to the White House – Jim McMahon shirt underneath his clothing. Mm-hmm. And I guess that really pissed off Gilbert Brown so much that he left him out of the book. So everybody is listed as being an active member of the roster, all these guys except Jim McMahon.
Well, I think that's fair. That's completely fair. He was kind of an asshole.
Yeah, she should have run him over.
That's right. That's
and
right.
He almost put a dent in your mom's car. And he that's almost put a dent in your mom's car.
I agree, 100%. Well, we've talked for about an hour now, and it's been great talking with Scott. I guess I'll leave it as we wrap things up. Any final words of wisdom? It can go in any direction. Whether it's from you, Kevin, you, Scott, give us some parting words as we wrap up the program here.
Well, I would just like to defer my time to one Scott Abbing. And if one were ever in need of your creative services, you never know, all the millions and millions of listeners, someone might be in need of your creativity. How does one get a hold of you?
Rob Lowe may need your creativity.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if Rob Lowe wants to hire me, I'll show up wherever he needs me.
And oh, literally, he would.
Set up the cameras, you know. That's the world I'm in. Is the phone could ring tomorrow and my entire life could change because I don't know who's going to be on the other end and what they're going to want me to do and what that's going to lead to. And every time I get a phone call, every time I get an email, it just kind of makes things a little more interesting each and every day. And I'm just going to keep riding this as long as I can. This year has been awful as a business owner. As far as the production industry goes, I don't want to paint too rosy of a picture on all of this.
Mm-hmm.
From a business owner's perspective, this has been a very bad year in the production world. Any of the live event stuff, sports, concerts, any sort of the corporate events and that sort of thing, it's all been shut down. So the opportunities to work have been few and far between when it comes to the event side of things. On the production side of things, as far as TV shows, most of them went out of production or shut down production. So there's not a lot happening on those fronts. On the corporate side of things, everyone's kind of in this middle ground place of not knowing what's going to happen next, kind of waiting to see where our country is going to go as far as policy on all of this is. So a lot of marketing directors and that sort of thing are not making big decisions or making big moves, at least from my perspective that I'm seeing. So, you know, it's been a really rough year business wise, but I'm trying to step back from all of that enough to say that I just hope that we as a country can come together and work through all of this and find the answers that we need to find to, I guess, find some peace in all of this. And that's all that I'm trying to do. And I hope that we can all do the same. So that's my only words of wisdom that I have for both of you gentlemen tonight.
All right, Scott Abbing, we'll leave it right there. Kevin Garthwaite, always great doing the show with you. Scott, thanks much. We'll talk to you again sometime in the future. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of Punch Punch.